Stay tuned for the Sean Casey Show, a podcast for patriots. And welcome back to the Sean Casey Show, a podcast for patriots. Another full episode on this Thursday, April 11, 2024. I'm Sean Casey. Welcome. And this is where the resistance meets each and every episode as we push back and fight back against the march to Marxism being led by Chairman Joe Kaplan, Kamala, Barack Hussein Obama, George the Commie Soros et al. And joining us in the battle is our executive producer, Michelle Double X Strasella. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Sean.
All right, everything good today?
Everything is doing well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Except well. The country's going to hell in a handbasket.
Gosh, tell me about it.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of ground to cover today. We're going to cover the FISA victory or sort of victory in Congress yesterday. Mm-hmm. We'll take a look at Trump at Chick-fil-A in Atlanta.
I love that.
And also the ongoing feud now between Trump, the speaker, between Marjorie Taylor Greene, Speaker Johnson, and Trump now has got himself involved in that. So we'll take a look at that. NPR finally admits what we've always known. They're too biased, too far to the left. We'll take a look at the COVID cover-up and fraud. Senator Rand Paul's over top of that. And the latest on Stormy, not the song by Dennis Yost in the Classics 4, but Stormy Daniels. And the what is being called the hush money trial, it's not even hush money. It's ridiculous. There's a letter that has surfaced now, and if that gets put into evidence, then I think that that case will be over. But the big news of the day today, have you heard? O.J. Simpson has died at the age of 76.
I did hear that. Yeah. Yep.
Died of his battle with prostate cancer over the last couple of years. Some might say he will now meet his maker, whichever maker that may be. There are some who believe that he will be burning in hell. Others will believe he'll ascend into heaven, but that's up to his maker to decide his fate. That is for sure. We do know that at one time, O.J. Simpson was a collegiate all-star, a pro football player, Hall of Famer for the Buffalo Bills. He was an actor. He was a commercial spokesman, and he was married to Nicole Brown Simpson at one point in time, where I think they were married about 7 years. And he was a beloved, athlete and role model.
Yep.
And then it all went south because OJ had a temper, and OJ's temper got him into big trouble. In fact, before Nicole Brown Simpson, I remember he was dating Tawny Catane. You might remember her from the White Snake music videos, the actress.
Oh, yeah.
She married David Coverdale of White Snake. And she got out just in time because, you know, he started wailing on Nicole Brown Simpson. This was before domestic abuse was even a thing.
Right.
They used to call it domestic discord. And then as a result of the Nicole Brown Simpson case, they started calling it domestic abuse because it was abuse. She was getting a living crap beat out of her by O.J. Simpson, who was jealous, very jealous, and had a temper. And so, of course, we all remember that, of course, those of us that were alive back then in June of 94, the horrific double murder in Brentwood, where she lived. They had been, I think, split up for about 2 years, OJ and her. He, of course, apparently was, we think, stalking her, trailing her, looking for the right time. And she and a waiter friend of hers, Ron Goldman, were murdered brutally. I mean, the autopsy photos, the public never saw, but I understand they were just as grisly, if not the most brutal ones you've ever seen. Nicole Brown Simpson was stabbed. She was nearly decapitated. This was a crime of rage, of incredible jealousy and emotion, and Ron Goldman, both of them dying. And the year later, eventually O.J. Simpson would stand trial and eventually be acquitted of those murders.
Wasn't that one of the first trials that was actually televised?
Yes. It was called the Trial of the Century. Mm-hmm. The trial lasted for 9 months.
I know.
And they assembled the dream team. The best defense that money can buy. Johnny Cochran, of course. That's where Kardashian got his start. That's where the Kardashians got their start. Their father, Robert Kardashian, was the initial attorney for O.J. Simpson. And then, of course, he turned it over to Johnny Cochran and that crew. But the dream team, remember, if they tried on the glove in front of everybody,
doesn't fit, you must acquit.
And that they did. And of course there were racial tensions, in Los Angeles at the time. So there was a black guy on trial for killing two white people. And, it was seen as, the white man, the system was trying to, set him up. And here was beloved, O.J. Simpson, football star, went to Southern California, grew up in Garden Grove. What have you, or he was actually in the projects. I think it was Nicole who grew up in Garden Grove, but anyway, it was a couple of mistakes. There were a lot of mistakes as we look back and see what happened in that trial. Of course, remember the chase, the Ford Bronco and the white Ford Bronco.
I will never forget that because we had a party over our house and it totally ruined the party. Cause everybody is glued to the TV.
Yeah.
Watching the Bronco.
Everybody's watching the slow, speed pursuit. Eventually he would turn himself in, but. So a couple of things, and people always ask me because, I was riveted to this as most of us were. But now looking back, the mistakes that were made that allowed O.J. Simpson to be acquitted. Now, there's no guarantee that he would have been found guilty if this didn't happen. But I think there'd have been a stronger chance. Number one, the change of venue. This should have been in the local courts in Brentwood, California, and not in Los Angeles. But again, political prosecutors like Gil Garcetti and others were able to get the venue changed to Los Angeles. Why? Because of the racial makeup of L.A. versus Brentwood. Brentwood's a largely white community, and that's where Nicole lived. And O.J. lived there, too, as well. O.J. was just as loved in the white community as he was in the black community at the time. And then, of course, that change of venue then changed the composition of the jury. A more favorable jury to O.J. Simpson. LAPD made a ton of mistakes. There was the chain of custody of the evidence. There was the Mark Furman, that racial component for Detective Furman. They made him out to be a racial monster. Then we now know that Marsha Clark, remember her, one of the prosecutors, along with Chris Darden, the other one?
Yeah.
She was white, he was black. Well, they were canoodling at the time.
Oh, yeah. See, I didn't know that.
Yes, they were. They had somewhat of a fling, and that was later admitted in years. I think it was back, maybe 5-6 years ago, I think, on that. Okay. There was a documentary that they did on it, and he hinted at it then. Then finally, in an interview, he did say, yeah, they were messing around. And so did they really have their focus on the case? Did they bring their A game, or were they glazing in each other's eyes and ignoring evidence there? So that I think that was a mistake. And of course the assembling of the best legal defense of money could buy, and OJ could afford it.
Oh, it was like a soap opera.
Yeah,
it, the whole thing.
Oh yeah, it was. And so he was eventually acquitted.
Yep.
And I think the vast majority of the country knew he was guilty. Even the ones that celebrated, they were out dancing in the streets. Many,
I remember that.
Yeah, many people, and I think even they knew he was guilty. But he's like, okay, he got off. Mm-hmm. Score one for us and one against the system. But then I think it was like 3 or 4 years later, he was in a civil trial found guilty of murdering. And again, obviously that's different. Ballgame, preponderance of evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt. You don't go to jail. And I think it was like a $33, $34 million judgment, of which he paid hardly anything to Fred Goldman and the family of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown. But they did get their guilty verdict. And then not long after that, he committed a felony. He broke into a hotel room in Las Vegas and to steal what memorabilia, which he said belonged to him. And he was found guilty of breaking, entering, and stealing. And of course, he did some jail time for that and then got out. And then he's been, I think, in Florida ever since. He's been on social media. Mm-hmm. He's been posting all sorts of tweets, but eventually he could not outrun prostate cancer. So O.J. Simpson is gone at the age of 76. But just brings back a lot of memories.
It does.
Think about it. That was 30 years ago this June.
Can't believe it.
Yeah, just incredible. All right, on to the rest of the show here today. And that includes our founding fathers. And we're talking about FISA here in a moment. And I want to go back because there's a lesson here to be learned from our founding fathers. The technology that powered the national security agencies, the NSAs, the illegal domestic spying, that, of course, that program, I think, would have amazed our founding fathers. James Madison, the other framers, the founding fathers of the Bill of Rights. And man, I remember this was a time when the steamboat was a technological marvel. It would have been unimaginable for the government to collect millions of innocent Americans' private communications and use computers to look for suspicious patterns. Did you know that every single stroke that you make on your electronic device is recorded?
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Every email, every text, everything you put in electronic form is gathered at by the NSA and stored in a database. And this, to me, is an ongoing violation of our fundamental civil liberties. And it would have been very familiar to the men who gathered in 1791 to adopt the Bill of Rights. The founding fathers then battled an 18th century version of the wholesale surveillance that the government is accused of doing today. Back in the day, it was an abuse of power of King George III. By King George II and the Third, King George II died in the midst of this, and that would give way to King George III. But this would invade the colonists' communications privacy. They were called writs of assistance. The king would authorize his agents to carry out wide-ranging searches of anyone, anywhere, anytime, regardless of whether they are suspected of a crime. These hated, and they were hated at the time, writs spurred the colonists, pushed us toward revolution, and directly motivated James Madison's crafting of the Fourth Amendment. That's where it came from, unreasonable search and seizures. So now we've come full circle. Barack Hussein Obama, Joe Biden, essentially updated this page from King George the Tyrant's playbook, engaged in a dragnet surveillance of millions of Americans under the FISA abuse. And where this plays in is this called the Paxton case. If you go look it up, I don't have time to read all of it here and share it with you, but this has happened in October of 1760. This guy named Charles Paxton, he was a customs official in Boston. He petitioned for new writs in Massachusetts Superior Court because King George II died. All writs of assistance had been issued to expire 6 months after his death. So the Crown was trying to hurry up and get new writs of assistance in place. And this basically, you know, these writs, they allowed the king's soldiers and the king's men to go anywhere at any time. They were authorized to search. They could arrest anyone. Search of land structures. They could go in your home. They could go anywhere they wanted to, in your shop, in your place of business, in your schools, and without a warrant, because the king had put out this writ of assistance. So a prominent attorney back then by the name of James Otis, he were representing the merchants in court fighting against the writs, and he said of these writs, quote, "The worst instance of arbitrary power, the most destructive of English liberty that it was ever found in an English law book." He said these writs would, quote, "totally annihilate the freedom of one's house and place the liberty of every man in the hands of every petty officer," end of quote. And a young John Adams, who was in the court, recently admitted to the Massachusetts bar, was watching Otis's performance, and he said at this point, the writs, quote, "breathed into this nation the breath of life," end of quote. So on, it was at the very least, gave us the Fourth Amendment and the Bill of Rights. But at the time, it was this tyranny, this idea that they could search, go anywhere, anytime, in your home, in your shop, any place that you are, and you couldn't stop them. You did nothing wrong, but they came in anyway. And that's what's happening with the FISA abuse. That's exactly what's happening now. And President Trump put out on Truth Social the other day, quote, "kill FISA. It was illegally used against me and many others. They spied on my campaign." And he's right. So if you don't know, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was put into place as part of the Patriot Act. It's called Section 702. It established the FISA court. Under the FISA Act, government officials, intelligence agencies can go to a FISA court and ask a judge and this is all done under the auspices of, you know, stopping terrorism. Remember 9/11? We needed tools to stop terrorists. We couldn't do roving wiretaps. If you got a warrant, you could only do one wiretap. You couldn't follow that wiretap from cell phone to cell phone. I understand the logic. I really do. And there's a part of me that says this would maybe have been a good idea if it was any time, but let's put it this way, our founding fathers knew they had this concern. Mm-hmm. And this is why there's too much trust in people to not abuse power that's easily abused. Remember, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's what happened. Obama abused it. Biden abused it. We have tens of thousands of government officials abusing this power to spy on Americans, to spy on President Trump as a candidate, and then to spy on his presidency.
Well, and it had a deadline, the Patriot Act, but then they kept renewing it, correct? Is that what?
Right. It's called reauthorization.
Yes.
And the reauthorization of the FISA Section 702 of the Patriot Act is April 19th. Coincidentally, that's the day Mike Gallagher is leaving Congress. I'm not sure why he picked that date, but April 9th of this week, we had been able to fill his seat and, you know, increase our margins in the House. But for some reason, he went past that. So now his seat remains open until the fall and just happens to coincide, if you believe that. April 19th, the day that the Section 702, expires. So again, this was abused. And I know the argument now is, but we need this. And look, Marjorie Taylor Greene voted to reauthorize. Our congressman in Maryland, Andy Harris, voted to reauthorize. I disagree with that completely. But the argument is that we need this to stop terrorism. Well, if you're so worried about stopping terrorism, don't worry about the reauthorization of Section 702 as much as securing our southern border. How you're going to stop it.
Do they have examples of where it helped, where they made headways with?
Yes, there are success stories. Granted, I'm not saying that it's not been useful.
Okay.
But once it's been abused,
right,
for political purpose, I'm sorry, the genie's out of the bottle. You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
I agree with that. Yeah.
It's got to go. I agree with Donald Trump. It's got to be killed. Not until we get to a point where we've revamped and reformed justice, FBI.
Checks and balances.
Yeah, we got a CIA agent now admitting under James O'Keefe. He's got the CIA and ex-FBI going, and we can get anybody we want.
Yep, I saw that.
You know, we can, we can do whatever we can. We can set you up, Fed's direction. We can jam you up whenever we want because they have the tools and we don't. So yesterday, 19 House Republicans joined with Democrats to block the move to start the debate on the bill to reauthorize the nation's warrantless spy program. See, to me, it's unconstitutional. It should have been struck down by the Supreme Court. Fourth Amendment says you got to have a warrant. The government cannot conduct unwarranted, unreasonable search and seizures. And when you go in, there's no two sides to the argument. You go to the FISA court before a FISA judge, only one side is represented, and that's the government. There's nobody there. There's no advocate for the public. There's no advocate for anybody else. You only hear, it's like a grand jury.
And that never ends well.
And 90-some% of the FISA warrants that are requested are granted. And you're right, it hasn't ended well.
Right.
So the 19 heroes, the 19 patriots, they're going to get our Patriots of the Week. We have another guy in mind as well that we'll honor individually, but they are Congressman Andy Biggs, Dan Bishop, Lauren Boebert, Tim Burchett, Michael Cloud, Eli Crane, Matt Gaetz, Bob Good, Paul Gosar, Clay Higgins, APL, Anna Paulina Luna, Nancy Mace, Corey Mills, Ralph Norman, Andy Ogle, Scott Perry, Matt Rosendale, Chip Roy, and Greg Stube. So Section 702, and again, joining the Democrats, progressive and other Democrats. So don't ever say you can't do bipartisan things. There's a common concern here that, look, Republicans could use this to abuse
exactly
a future Democrat president. Or a Democrat member. Now, interestingly enough, guess what? In this bill, in this reauthorization, Congress did a carve out. For who? Guess who you think they carved out for?
Biden.
Congress.
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 Well, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's close. Pretty much the same thing.
Exactly.
Congress gave its members a special carve out in the latest version of the FISA bill. Not the American people, not the presidential candidates, but themselves. Again, they hate you. They carved themselves out in the FISA warrantless spying bill. Only ordinary Americans will now be spied on by their government without a warrant. It's just craziness. So now you might say, let's listen to Marjorie Taylor Greene. She voted to reauthor, or at least open up the debate. She didn't actually vote to reauthorize FISA, but she said, let's debate it on the floor.
I think we need open rule where all amendments get a vote. I think that's the most transparent way to go forward. I am, for the record again, officially against reauthorization of FISA as it is. I think we need warrant requirements, and I really support Warren Davidson's amendment, protecting people's personal privacy data. I think our border is the most important thing we should be focused on. And if our government really cared about protecting the American people from a terrorist attack or anyone else, we would close the border, secure the border, and deport many, many people. So that's my position on it. But as far as what happened in the conference, there was no consensus, no answer. And I think my case is probably building on my left.
And so this is how it goes down. First, the intelligence community tells Congress, and Chris Wray's up on the Hill today speaking, or actually in a couple of minutes from now, he'll be speaking to the House. And basically what the intel community, the FBI, DOJ, they all scared the dickens out of the House and Senate Intel Committee. They say all hell's going to break loose if we don't reauthorize full electronic surveillance of Americans. And Congress is petrified. They're scared to death of the IC. Why? Remember, it was Chuck Schumer warning Trump, you don't want to get into war with the 17 intelligence agencies because they spy on you. They gather dirt. And that's, remember the 51 intel spies that signed the letter?
Yes.
So Speaker Johnson and a lot of these key participants today are going to be totally buffaloed and kept from understanding that the 702 has nothing to do with incidental collection of American data, while the honorable intelligence community are doing foreign intercepts. Johnson and most Republicans believe the IC nonsense. They really do. I don't. I know better now. And so, again, how can you sit there and argue that, as I said earlier, that you got to have this while you're letting thousands of terrorists in the country through the southern border crisis? They're saying, my God, we need to monitor the terrorists. And if you take away the 702, the foreign terror cells will activate and they'll start killing us all. Do you have blood on your hands?
They already set us up to get us killed.
Yeah, by laying this open border.
Yeah,
the intelligence committee could put a stop to it. They could say, Joe Biden, secure the border. Otherwise, we're gonna reveal everything you've taken from the CCP and the murder mullahs of Iran and everybody else for them and Ukraine.
If they've been collecting everything, then they got the goods on Joe.
Right.
Not showing it.
They have the goods on Joe, and that's the reason why they were able to rig the election.
Yep.
Because, you know, we're taking Trump out. He's too much of a trouble, too much of a problem. We'll hear more about that in COVID. But again, here's the other thing that bothers me with FISA. I know I'm on my a soapbox here today on this, but I think it's important that American people know this. This is the main tool that the intelligence community uses to retain power. Without the legal use of 702 authority, and if the IC was held to account for the violations therein, all of the power could shift dramatically in the corrupt DC system. The officer of Inspector General Michael Horowitz testified April of last year that more than 3.4 million search queries into the NSA database took place between December 1st, 2020 and November 30th, 2021. The government officials and or contractors working on behalf of the federal government conducted these searches, and they're based on authorizations related to FISA and the FISA Act. Now, approximately 30% of those were outside the rules and regulations that govern warrantless searches. So while the PC government calls non-compliant searches, what does that mean? That means more than 1 million searches of private documents and communications of the American people were illegal and outside the rules. Additionally, the IG also admitted that somewhere north of 10,000 federal employees, 10,000, have access to conduct these searches of the NSA database, which contains electronic data, as I said, of every single American's emails, text messages, social media posts, IMs, DMs, phone calls, geolocation identifier. How do you think they found the J6ers?
Right.
How do you think the FBI found everybody involved that was in the building or on the grounds that day? They tapped into the NSA database. They can get your electronic funds, your banking records. Every single keystroke that you put in somewhere on an electronic device is in the NSA database.
And you know, somewhere, some way, somehow, somebody is a CCP operative that's in NSA that can is privy to this information.
Yeah. So again, in a normal functioning system of government, everything would be stopped. This would be a national outrage, just like the writs of assistance were back during revolutionary days. This is beyond jaw-dropping. And it is something that has to be stopped. It has to be killed. Donald Trump is right. Kill FISA. Okay, let's go back to where we were before 9/11. Just, you can fix the guerrilla wall. You can fix certain things so that the FBI and the CIA can talk with one another. But you don't need to spy on Americans, to spy on candidates, to spy on your opponents. And let's tell you, the CIA has spied on the Senate before. Look, their job is to dig up dirt so they've got blackmail material on senators and congressmen.
I mean, didn't they thwart threats before 9/11? I mean, all of a sudden, because this was so big.
As the story goes, the FBI were tracking foreign nationals that were coming into the country on temporary visas, and they were taking flight simulator training.
Yeah.
And they knew who they were. They knew what they were up to. They thought they were up to no good. They just didn't know the plot. They didn't know the scheme, the specific scheme. So heretofore, you were hoping that they could at least talk with the CIA, and the CIA was following. Look, Osama bin Laden had declared war on the United States in 1998, calling us a paper tiger. And so that's when the plot, that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed helped to mastermind. And that's when it all started. And so the FBI there was something that was not right here. And had they been able to talk to the CIA, they may have been able to put two and two together and prevent it.
Right.
But because of Jamie Gorelick was an official at the Justice Department, when they came to her and said, hey, we got to talk to the CIA, we say, no, can't do it. CIA is only foreign. They can only spy on foreign. They can't, you can't use them on domestic soil. And so the FBI went home with their hat in their hand, and the rest, as they say, is history. It was called the guerrilla wall between the CIA and the FBI.
Yep. And that was the biggest problem, in my opinion.
It was.
But the other thing that I was going to say about the FISA is go back to all the school shootings and everything, why didn't they get these perpetrators were putting on social media that they were going to do something? And if they're counting at every keystroke, why isn't that being?
I didn't say they were looking at every keystroke. And that's a great question, Michelle, because think about the millions, if not billions of bits of data that are pouring into the NSA database. Now there are algorithms are written to put red flags, and you're right. Yeah, any kind of school shooting reference or any kind of that should be red flag. It's not. But it just goes to show you how selective they are.
Yes.
They are selectively picking their targets. They're selectively picking people like Trump or, let's say, white nationalists or evangelical Christians or traditional guy, whatever. They are handpicking the opponents they want to spy on.
There you go.
So that tells you, how they're doing it. And that's why it's got to stop. It is a electronic writ of assistance. It is tyranny. And whenever there's tyranny, you lose liberty. And that's what this election's all about, the fight for liberty. Remember the Order of Rights and the Declaration of Independence. What are they? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Of course, life, we're having that debate and battle right now with the abortion issue. Of course, we're seeing it now over in foreign countries with their euthanizing people that are mentally ill. And nowhere close to dying. So we've got the life question, but liberty. If you don't have freedom, if you don't have liberty, you don't have a quality of life. You're not allowed to pursue happiness. So interesting that we have that. Okay, Marjorie Taylor Greene continues her push to oust the speaker, although her vacate the chair motion is strictly just for without privilege right now, meaning that she's just really warning him. Hey, don't do this. She wrote a 5-page letter to her colleagues right before the vote to reauthorize. And she, there were 7 points that she made about Speaker Johnson, that 7 tenets that should guide our conference under Speaker Johnson's speakership. 1, restore trust by ensuring total transparency, open processes, and regular order. 2, advance a comprehensive policy agenda supported by conference consensus. 3, promote individual members and thus the whole team by working to understand and emphasize each member's unique strengths, district dynamics and challenges, and each individual goals and objectives. 4, engage members in productive working groups to formulate solutions in key policy areas and enhance our internal communications and team building. 5, effectively message to persuasively inform the Republican base and the American people of our policy agenda, why we are pursuing it, and how it will ensure liberty, there's that word again, opportunity and security for all Americans. 6, build and utilize external coalitions in the conservative ecosphere, including think tanks, policy groups, and other allied organizations that can contribute to our efforts. And 7, develop and grow our majority by building upon our resources and expanding the base to successfully advance our conservative vision and agenda. And Speaker Johnson, according to Marjorie Taylor Greene, has unfortunately not lived up to a single one of his self-imposed tenets, allowing us one day rather than 72 hours to review a 1,000-plus-page bill to which no amendments could be offered, was not ensuring total transparency, open processes, and regular order. And she goes item by item, and you should check it out online. But you can see why she's pushing for Speaker Johnson to hold him accountable. Now, that being said, Trump has weighed into this, and he's telling Marjorie Taylor Greene that she's wrong to back off. And, you know, Speaker Johnson tomorrow is going to be at Mar-a-Lago with President Trump to talk about election integrity and trying to organize and guarantee free and fair elections. So something's cooking. Not sure what. We'll find out tomorrow. We'll have it on the commentary on Saturday. But I give Marjorie Taylor Greene credit because she's one of the few that actually will hold not just, not just Speaker out. Johnson, but Trump's, she'll hold Trump's feet to the fire as well.
Right.
So now Trump, knowing Trump, he knows he's got to, at least in the beginning with the new Congress, probably end up working with McConnell and Speaker Johnson. Until there's enough troops in Washington, you got to get get rid of a lot of rhinos in the House and in the Senate before you got America First MAGA agenda Republicans that can support the full Trump agenda. So you do have to play ball with these rhinos. Now, Speaker Johnson's a backbencher. I don't think he's owned by K Street. I think Kevin McCarthy was. I think Speaker Johnson is just, you know, you're trying to herd cats right now. You're watching your margins thin. You don't want to throw the House completely into the Democrat hands. And I think that's the reason why Trump is telling Marjorie to back off. Am I? You know, so it's good cop, bad cop.
Right. I look at it as Johnson stepped into a pile of crap when he walked in there, and he's just trying to thin it out.
He did. All right. Donald Trump flew into Atlanta yesterday for a high dollar fundraiser, and on the way stopped by a Chick-fil-A in the Vine City neighborhood, where he was warmly received by workers, HBCU students. I guess you may have seen the videos by now on social media. If you haven't, they've gone viral. The videos, I think, are really going to be a red flag of fire alarm for the Biden-Harris campaign. Because, you know, what I saw in this, in all these shots, Michelle, and I'll get your impressions, okay, is the friendly interaction between Trump and black women. Working the counter at the Chick-fil-A, their friendly, radiant, smiling faces. I didn't see one frown. Mm-mm. I didn't see one stoic. I'm not a Trump fan. They were all beaming.
No, and the one woman shouted out, right? Don't listen to the media.
Yeah, that was the HBCU student who gave President Trump a hug and said, don't let the media fool you. We support you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Trump announces he's ordering 30 milkshakes and a bunch of chicken for the customers while he was engaging in conversation. It was just a really feel good moment. Here's a man of the people. This wasn't manufactured. This wasn't a photo op. He wasn't told to stand here, read this card like a Joe Biden has. I mean, the only thing Joe Biden does is grab an ice cream cone and looks like a goofball licking it.
I wish he would come here. I know this area would just love him.
Well, he was here in, what year was it? 2016, I think it was. He was in Dundalk, if I remember correctly, in Maryland, which is right near where the Key Bridge collapsed on the other side there.
Yeah.
But, this was a great moment. And during his stay here, when he got off the plane in Atlanta, he addressed reporters, had a few choice words to say about Chairman Joe calling out inflation is raging, he said. He also said that Biden is a Manchurian candidate.
I predict that November 5th, it's all going to turn around. We're going to get our country back. This incompetent man that's president, he's a terrible person. He's a terrible president. He's a Manchurian candidate, if you look at him, because he gets money from everybody. He's a Manchurian candidate. I predict that Biden is going to be gone in 6 months now. That's all we have. But 6 months is a long time, because the damage he can do in 6 months, he's done more damage than the 10 worst presidents in the history of our country. There has never been anybody that's damaged our country like crooked Joe Biden. So I predict November 5th, the most important day in the history of our country, and it's going to be Christian Visibility Day. Christian Visibility Day. Christians are going to come out and they're going to vote like never before. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's all you can say. It's Manchurian candidate. He also had a message for Jewish Democrats that are putting their party, their politics, their ideology before their faith, and throwing Israel under the bus.
Any Jewish person that votes for a Democrat or votes for Biden should have their head examined.
Yeah.
Are you listening, Chuck Schumer?
He doubled down on that because he said it before, and the Democrats are like, ooh, what's he trying to say? And he doubled down. Well, speak the truth. Just keep speaking the truth.
I'll tell you why Trump does this. Trump does this because, is he going to get every Jewish Democrat to think like that? Of course not. But if he picks off, I don't know, 10%. Imagine now he's working the margins. Biden and Harris are hemorrhaging in the black vote, in the Hispanic vote. Imagine if the Jewish vote starts to turn.
I know the Jewish people in college that have been hiding in libraries and everything. So the Hamas sympathizers don't get to them. I know they're probably thinking twice about voting Democrat next time.
Well, Joe Biden gives an interview to Univision, 30-minute interview, and not once mentions hostages, Israeli or American, in the interview.
Wow.
Basically, you know, taking Hamas aside, telling Israel, you got to surrender, you got to cease fire 6 to 8 weeks, because he's afraid of, that's his constituency here in America right now is not much. It's the Rainbow Mafia. It's single women who abortion is their sacrament. It is, the Arabs and Muslims that came in from countries that still want to impose Sharia law in our country. It's Hollywood and it's the global elitists, and it's shrinking. His support is shrinking by the day. Speaking of Chairman Joe, rough day yesterday with the Japan Prime Minister as he made a couple of gaffes. Let's have some fun, shall we?
From the very beginning, I used to teach the Second Amendment in law school. Mm-hmm. From the very beginning, there were limitations. You couldn't own a cannon. You couldn't. You could own a rifle, a gun, but there were
weapons
certain things
war.
You couldn't. But they weren't weapons of war.
You enormous liar.
Yeah, he is an enormous liar because, number one, he never taught the Second Amendment. Number two, he never taught. He never taught, period. And you could. He's wrong. You could own a cannon. Privateers, as they were known back then, they owned cannons to help protect their business, their land, et cetera. It was like, remember, at that time, it was a revolution. Every man, woman, and child for themselves. And whatever weapon you could get a hold of, you got a hold of, including cannons. The problem came on making sure you get ammunition and making those cannonballs, but you could own a cannon. Then another gaffe.
Elect me. I'm in the 20th century.
Yeah, you're in the 20th century. All right. What century, Anjo? That would be the 21st. Okay.
Oh, Lord.
it's again.
You enormous liar.
And you look at this and then, remember the old adage, never ask a question that you don't know the answer to, especially if you're a lawyer, especially if you're a member of the media. Mika Brzezinski, that's Joe Scarborough's squeeze on MSDNC, She had Mark Halpern on and a panel talking to a panel of undecided voters. And normally this kind of stuff is, you think, okay, MSDNC, they got this, they got a setup here, right? Mm-hmm. These people are going to all be undecided. They're all going to go for Biden. Well, unfortunately, maybe they switched him out at the last second, or maybe they just didn't do their due diligence because it was an uh-oh moment.
The undecided voters were also asked how they think President Biden is doing on the economy. Take a listen.
I think he's been absolutely disastrous for the economy.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So raise your hand if you think President Trump's policies on the economy would be better for your family personally. Raise your hand. All right. So that is everybody.
Nine.
Wow.
Nine undecided voters all said Trump.
So you have to wonder if whoever hired Rona McDaniel and then had to fire her stuck them in there.
Right. Maybe. Maybe that was just a, I'll get you, Mika.
Yeah.
And your little dog, too. All right. President Trump also dropped a bombshell letter from Stormy Daniels that he said he said this on Truth Social, quote, look what I just found. Will the fake news report it? It's a official statement of Stormy Daniels, January 30th, 2018. It reads, to whom it may concern, over the past few weeks, I've been asked countless times to comment on reports of an alleged sexual relationship I had with Donald Trump many, many, many years ago. The fact of the matter is that each party to this alleged affair denied its existence in 2006, 11, 16, 17, and now again in 2018. I am not denying this affair because I was paid hush money, as has been reported in overseas-owned tabloids. I am denying this affair because it never happened. I will have no further comment on this matter. Please feel free to check me out on Instagram at the Stormy Daniels. Thank you, Stormy Daniels. So now if this is legit, if this is a legit statement, a legit letter offered by her, I didn't see, there was a signature on it. So at the very bottom of the statement, then they should introduce this as the first piece of evidence before even the jury is. And then that should be dismissed. This is ridiculous.
I don't think Trump would put some out like that that wasn't true.
Yeah, because that would only just be fodder for the fake news media.
Exactly.
So. And now the trial is supposed to get underway starting Monday or Tuesday with jury selection. So we'll see if this letter will carry any weight at all. All right, then there's NPR. We have an incredible admission by Yuri Berliner. He's a business reporter for National Propaganda Radio, as I've always called it, where the men sound like women and the women sound like men. And it has long been a liberal conclave and media entity. Oh, sure, maybe they had a few Republicans working there, but they were probably rhinos or center-left Republicans, or ones that Republicans in name only. But he reports that they just basically have lost their way. They've lost their mission. That is, they've become sort of, not about reportage. They've become punitive. They've become advocates, yellow journalists.
Figuring this out?
Yeah, finally, after all these years. And some of the stuff was they didn't report on the laptop, the Hunter right. Biden. And now the first thing they do is they look to punish Trump and not cover both sides. And so I think it was a little even too much for him. And he said they recently polled the news staff. There were 87 people on the staff that were Democrats, zero who were Republicans. So he asked for a meeting with the head of NPR, and the NPR said, sure, let's meet. And, of course, he had to cancel, never got another audience. So he has probably, let's know what Yuri Berliner has to say.
These are things that need to be addressed. We haven't. We've been too reluctant, too frightened, too timid to deal with these things. And I think that this is the right opportunity to bring it all out in the open.
Yeah, let's bring it out on the open, and so we can defund your ass. Literally, with taxpayer dollars are going for national partisan or propaganda radio, and Berliner has now just blown the lid off the whole thing.
I've been at NPR a long time, 25 years. You could say I'm a lifer. But when I started, there was a liberal orientation, but I think we were more guided by curiosity, open-mindedness. You know, you said, talked about policy. We were kind of nerdy and really like to dig into things and understand the complexity of things. That I think that's evolved over the years into a much narrower kind of niche thinking, a group think that's really clustered around a very selective progressive views that don't allow enough air, enough spaciousness to consider.
Jim Gossett marking the occasion.
NPR's full of liberals who protect Hunter Biden. Their own editor said that with pencil makeshift, they were citing the Russian hoax. NPR pushed to the max with their attacks, while Hunter's laptop they covered up. Those are the facts, and I guess that's why they call them fake news. NPR's mission to distort and confuse, pull all their funding, all of the money that NPR's handed should be disbanded. And I guess that's why they call them fake news.
I guess that's why.
I guess that's why they call them fake news.
Jim Gossett, two S's, two T's. You can check him out at patreon.com. Yeah, think about that. The Russian hoax, nobody apologized for that. All the reporting, the piling on, the breathless regurgitation of junk that was fed to them.
He said it was becoming narrower, and the narrower it was all based off of emotion, and that emotion is they didn't like Trump.
Right. Get Trump. I tell you, Trump has broken the left. He really has.
Yes.
He's gotten in their heads, and again, he's not going to stop, and God bless him. It's what this country needs again. I want to call out Nebraska State Senator Mike McDonnell as our honorary patriot of the week, a former Democrat. Last week, he announced he's joining the Republican Party. Why? Because there's no longer room for Catholics or people of Christian faith in the Democrat Party.
Thank you for coming today. 1984, I decided to register as a Democrat. I was a Christian, member of the Roman Catholic Church, and I was proud of that, and I was pro-life. 2016, I decided to run for the legislature. Christian, member of the Roman Catholic Church, pro-life, pro-union, pro-Second Amendment. Wanted to see how we could grow our state and reduce property taxes at the same time. All those things you talk door-to-door that you believe in. As a process we've gone through down here as senators, I've tried to stick with those principles. That has not changed for me. I asked the Democratic Party, Douglas County, to respect that I'm pro-life, that I'm a member of the Roman Catholic Church. And my beliefs are based on that. Douglas County Democrats, instead of respecting it, they decided to punish it. They said you cannot participate, you can't be a delegate. We're not going to share our party resources. I continue to vote pro-life. State Democratic Party decided to censure me. I continue to vote pro-life. This is not an easy decision. After 40 years of being a registered Democrat, having your grandfather tell you when you're 10 years old, what are we? We're Irish, we're Catholic, and we're Democrats. That kind of stuck with me. And we had many discussions after that, that a lot of things he tried to teach me didn't stick. But it's never easy for someone to make this kind of decision. But what makes it easier is the people standing behind me. Over the last year, regardless of my decision switching parties, they have been so supportive. Based on the things that would be said in the media or in social media, they were very supportive. We had great discussions about what the Republican Party is doing, where they're trying to go, how I potentially could fit in there. But the greatest thing about it is now I can participate again. When something's taken away from you as potentially being able to attend a meeting, they say, well, we don't want you here, and we're not going to share our resources with you, that hits you pretty hard. but it also makes you appreciate something about our democracy, the idea of being able to participate. Today I'm announcing I am now going to be a registered Republican in the state of Nebraska.
Mike McDonald, a Democrat of 40 years, said enough is enough. And I think what's great about this, Michelle, is that people I don't care what your party is, these are Americans.
That's right.
These are Americans. These are patriots. These are Catholics. They're Jews. They're Episcopalian. They're Presbyterian. They're of all different faiths. They're Muslims in some cases. And they're saying, we want traditional American values. And we don't like where this country's headed. So that takes a lot of courage. I give him credit. It takes a lot of courage to renounce a party that you've been a member of for 40 years. But the way I look at it, they renounced him, not vice versa.
Right.
Time for the liberal lunatics of the day. Our nominees are one Texas Congresswoman, Jasmine Crockett.
Just this past week, I saw, I don't remember which celebrity, but it was actually a celebrity. And I was like, I don't know that that's not necessarily a bad idea, but I'd have to think through it a lot. One of the things that they proposed is black folk not have to pay taxes for a certain amount of time, because then again, that puts money back in your pocket. But at the same time, it may not be as objectionable to some people about actually giving out dollars. But obviously, then you start dealing with the different tax brackets and things like that. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, we argue the reparations make sense, because so many black folk, not only do you owe for the labor that was stolen and killed and all the other things, right? But the fact is, like, we end up being so far behind, right? And so it's like, how do you bring forth people? Exactly. And so it's like, if you do the no tax thing for people that are already, say, struggling and aren't really paying taxes in the first place, it doesn't really, exactly.
They may want those checks like they got during COVID.
Exactly.
All right. First things first, this woman is just a nut job. Secondly, there's never going to be a national reparations bill, because the estimated cost of that is somewhere upwards of $19 trillion with a T, $19 trillion. It will bankrupt this nation completely. Not going to happen. Now, you got 21 cities out there, Evanston, Illinois, parts of Baltimore, parts of they're dabbling with universal income or reparations, and they can do that because they're run by progressives. And there's really no mounted opposition, but it's completely different at the national level, and it's just not going to happen. But and again, everybody should pay taxes. It's unconstitutional to treat people unequally, whether you're white, black, or brown, whatever the case may be. So she's nominee number one, and we got to dust off Sunny Hostin of the View for her eclipse was caused by climate change.
We've got a solar eclipse. We've got the earthquake.
Down the hallway.
Ran down the hallway.
The rapture is here.
The rapture's here. And then also I learned that the cicadas are coming.
Cicadas.
Cicadas. Although I love the first time in
two different kinds of cicadas.
Yes, two different times are coming.
The good cicadas and the bad cicadas.
But for the first time in many, many years.
No, every 17 years this happens.
Well, that's not what I read, but maybe, you know better. But
in a way,
say all those things together would maybe lead one to believe that, you know, either climate change exists,
that's more
or something
point.
Is really
or something
going
is returning.
All right, so eclipse. Yeah, sure enough, caused by climate change.
Climate change.
Yeah. How do you explain those eclipses that happened before climate change? Oops. That's like Sheila Jackson Lee. How do you land on gas? Yeah. And our final nominee today, Whoopi Goldberg, also of The View.
Take a look at the things that they're rolling back. Mm. Remember I said ages ago, you know, they in their minds, they want to bring slavery back. They're okay with it because, you see, things change. You know, one of the good things about the Supreme Court is you can fight to make sure you make stuff better. Mm-hmm. You don't generally fight to make stuff worse. Or to roll back. And to me, if you're okay rolling that back when things were not even a state, when we had no say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how's that going to roll? How's that going to roll? What's the next thing? Because, you know, on this, with all of this comes birth control.
Right.
With all of this comes everything that you need as a woman to have had put in place to make sure that we were doing better than we were.
And
Republicans, it's like Joe Biden. The Republicans want to put you all back in chains. You know, so it's slavery is coming back under the Republicans. Remember this. It was Republicans who freed the slaves. It was Republicans who delivered the Emancipation Proclamation. It was Republicans like Dr. Martin Luther King that helped with the civil rights movement. And eventually, it was only because the Democrats hijacked it, they got any credit whatsoever. So it's not Republicans that want to enslave you. It's the Democrat progressive ideology. And blacks are awakening up to that, to that fact. And I think you're going to see a big change coming in.
The only reason why she says that anyway is because they're losing and they know it and they're getting desperate.
It's race, race and abortion. That's what drive us. All right. So who do you vote for? Is it Jasmine Crockett? Black folk don't need to pay taxes. Sonny Hostin, the eclipse was caused by climate change. Or Whoopi Goldberg, Republicans want to enslave you again.
The liberal lunatics, I always look to the legislators, and I would have to say Crockett.
Crockett.
She's a legislator, and you know
she can affect change.
Ideas,
All right, because the view, I think, are people starting to tune them out?
Oh yeah,
yeah. I would agree with you on that. Again, the dumbest Democrat on the planet. We're gonna have to start doing that because they're just too many to pass up on. You got Kamala Harris. You got Hank Johnson. You've got Sonny Hostin. You've got Sheila, two Confederate names with landing on the moon, which is. Gas, you got Whoopi, you got AOC, didn't know what a garbage disposal was. Maybe we'll do that. That'll be a new feature we come up with, the dumbest Democrat of the week. That might be good. All right, time for our outrages here. And Michelle, you get to kick it off today.
Well, Maryland is going to close 3 coal power plants. Okay, the one that powers my region and probably yours too, and Baltimore City is set to close in June of 2025. Now, the biggest thing with this is that they're not ready for it yet. And PGM Interconnection is an organization that oversees these types of changes for the transmissions. They said, we're not ready. And they even asked, the Federal Energy Regulation Commission if Brandon Shores could stay open while they put the transmissions into place. And they said no. So it's going to degrade our grid reliability for over 1 million Maryland consumers during peak hours, including the entirety of the city of Baltimore, for the years between the stated deactivation of Brandon Shores and the date whereby needed transmission can be constructed, which is roughly by 2028. So for 3 years, we're going to be in unstable times.
Yeah, you're going to want to maybe lock in those electric rates if you can. Because
it's going to go up too. That's the other
thing. Yeah. Thanks to the, and by the way, that was what you said, 2028. By 2035, you won't be able to buy gas cars in the state of Maryland anymore. Thanks to these climate change crazies. My outrage is the federal government opened up a criminal investigation into Ashley Babbitt after she, while unarmed, was shot and killed by a police officer on J6. That, according to Judicial Watch. They got 62 pages of records from the DOJ under a FOIA request revealing the agenda pursued by the government after the officer, ex-Capitol Police cop Lieutenant Michael Byrd, murdered her. The report from the watchdog group explained Babbitt was killed as she climbed into a broken interior window in the Capitol that day when hundreds protested what they perceived and was the unjust awarding of the White House to Joe Biden following the 2020 election. The records show that 8 days after Ashley's death, she was targeted in a posthumous investigation that focused on potential violations, including civil disorder, unlawful entry, riots, and injuries to property. So they murdered her, then they investigated her, and then they were going to blame her for her own murder. That is like the red Chinese that they give you the death penalty for just about anything over there that they don't like you for. They execute you. Then they send your family a bill for the ammunition. And that is my outrage. Thanks for joining us this full episode for this week. Don't forget the Casey commentary coming up Saturday, back on Tuesday. Remember, you can email us, dumbest Democrat on the planet. Love to hear your suggestions. The Sean Casey Show at gmail.com.
Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction.
I better start digging that coal out there in the backyard, Michelle.
Chopping wood.
That's going to do it. And again, Casey commentary come up on Saturday. Thanks to our executive producer, Double X. Appreciate that.
My pleasure. See you Tuesday.
Associate producers Hunter and Logan Casey. Remember, we'll see you on Saturday. Fight hard. Stay free.